rights and obligations of the spouses. Men are the guardians of women, because God has given the one more preference over the other, and because they financially support them. Consequently, pious women are obedient to their husbands and keep their secrets, for Allah also keeps secrets. And as for those whom you fear rebellion, admonish them first, and next, refuse to share their beds, and even then if they do not listen, punish them. Then if they obey you, take no further action against them. Indeed, Allah is exalted and mighty. Surah 4 verse 34. In the verses preceding the above quoted verse, the Almighty has made it clear that the real sphere in which one should strive in outdoing others is not the sphere of inborn abilities and characteristics, because in this sphere some in reality hold preference over others. The Almighty has created some special people superior to others as regards their mental, physical, economic, and social status. Similar is the case between a man and a woman. They have been created as counterparts, such that one is by nature the active member and the other the passive one. While the former trait needs domination, vigor, and force, the latter needs gentleness, subtlety, and acquiescence. Viewed thus, each possesses relative superiority to the other. These are inborn characteristics, and any effort to surpass one another in this area would be tantamount to waging war against nature. This would, of course, only leave them to mourn their own misfortune. The Almighty has pointed out that in contrast to this sphere, there is another sphere in which people should strive to outdo one another. This is the sphere of earning reward for oneself through good deeds, high character, and virtue. The Quran at various places has referred to this sphere by the comprehensive words, faith and righteous deeds. There is no restriction on anyone in striving to outdo others in this sphere. In fact, trying to surpass others in this sphere is as desirable as it is condemnable in the sphere of innate abilities. Both a man and a woman will earn great reward if they strive and exert themselves in this area. It is open for every person, whether a bondsman or a free man, a person of high social status or low, good-looking or ugly, blind or blessed with the faculty of sight. If a person does want to become superior to others, it is this sphere that he should select for all his efforts and endeavors. Wasting one's effort in the wrong sphere only brings into existence clashes and disputes, which are of no avail. Consequently, if he really wants to test his mettle and expend his energies, he must select the sphere of piety and virtue. The Quran says, "And in no way covet those things in which God has bestowed his favors on some of you than on others. To men it is allotted what they earn, and to women what they earn. And ask God of his bounty, for God has full knowledge of all things." Surah 4 verse 32. This verse pinpoints the above stated premise as the guiding principle in the organization of a family setup. A family is like a small state. Just as every state requires a ruler for its establishment and survival, this small state also requires someone to take charge of its helm. Either the husband could have been bestowed with this responsibility, or the wife. The Quran informs us that the husbands have been entrusted with this responsibility. An expression has been used by the Quran to convey this purport. In Arabic, when a preposition is used after a verb, the meanings of protection and financial responsibility are incorporated in the verb. This, in other words, refers to heading a family, and all these things are mutually essential. The Quran has given two reasons for this choice. While explaining these reasons, Imam Amin Asan Islahi writes, "First, men have been granted superiority over women. There are certain innate abilities and traits in men which are more pronounced in him, and because of which he has been made the head of a family unit. For example, a man is much more gifted innately to protect and to defend himself and to earn livelihood and to take the initiative than a woman. It should be appreciated here that the superiority men have over women is not absolute. It is only in certain spheres which entitle men to become head of the family unit. There are certain other spheres in which women are more superior to men, but they do not entitle them to become the head of family. For example, a man does not have the extent of ability a woman has to take care of household affairs and to look after children. That is why the superiority which is mentioned in the verse is alluded to in an implicit manner, such that it can be concluded that both men and women are superior to one another in different spheres. However, a man is superior to a woman as far as becoming the head of family is concerned. Second, a husband bears financial responsibility for the wife. It is his obligation to earn and fulfill the needs of his wife and children. Obviously, this responsibility has not been assumed as a coincidence or as a favor, but because of the fact that only he is fully capable of doing so. He only has this ability, and only he can fulfill its rights. After declaring that the husband should head a family, the Quran goes on to point out certain things to the wife for the smooth functioning of the institution of family. They are, wives should be obedient and adaptable to their husbands. They should keep the secrets of their husbands and protect their honor and integrity. The first of these things does not require elaboration. Without obedience and adjustment, no system can work, whether it be a state or any other institution. This is the natural requirement of any system. In the absence of these attitudes, no system can function and will ultimately disintegrate by giving way to indiscipline and anarchy. An expression has been adopted for the second of these things. Generally, this expression has been taken to imply guarding in absentia. This writer has taken it to imply keeping of secrets, as this, in his opinion, is the correct connotation of the expression. While explaining the meaning of this expression, Imam Amin Asan Islahi writes, "One reason for adopting this meaning is that the word is very commonly used to imply secrets. Second, here the nature of the expression is such that it cannot be taken to mean guarding in absentia. Third, guarding of secrets is one of the most important issues between a husband and wife. They are the natural protectors of one another in this regard. The position of the wife is more important in this regard. She has full knowledge of her husband's weaknesses and strengths. She is well aware of what ensues in the house, as well as full knowledge of the extent and nature of her husband's wealth and property. His honor and integrity rest with her. If she decides to reveal all his secrets, she can totally disgrace him. For this reason, the Quran has specially mentioned this attribute of a wife. The addition of some words is very meaningful and refers to the exalted status of this attribute. It is in fact a manifestation of a divine attribute in man. The Almighty also keeps secrets of his creatures. If he starts revealing these secrets, everyone would be totally humiliated." Thus, the above verse outlines the attitudes of pious wives. As the natural outcome of this directive, wives who adopt a rebellious attitude or reveal household secrets are not pious in the eyes of the Almighty. However, if a wife becomes rebellious, can a husband punish her? The Quran has replied to this question in the affirmative. The verse refers to the rebellion of a wife by the word, which literally means to defy authority. However, it is predominantly used for the utter defiance of authority a wife shows to the husband. Obviously, the word is not used for a blemish or for an instance of indifference by the wife. Similarly, it does not imply that a wife cannot express her opinion, taste, or the various traits of her personality. It implies the behavior which a wife adopts when she seems inclined to challenge the authority of the husband and disrupt the discipline of the house. If the situation reaches this extent, the Almighty has given the husband three options. First, he should urge his wife to mend her ways. The words used by the Quran mean that she can be admonished and also scolded to some extent in this regard. Second, intimate marital relations with her should be suspended in order to communicate to her that if she does not mend her ways, there would be other repercussions, similar to those a teacher gives to a student. It is evident from the style of the verse that a gradual sequence should be adopted in exercising these options. In other words, the second step after the first should only be adopted if the husband is convinced that there is no other option but to go on to the next step. These measures point to the utmost limit to which a husband can go regarding admonishing his wife. The Quran says that if the wife mends her ways, through these measures a husband should not look for revenge and vengeance. He is warned thus, "Indeed God is exalted and mighty." The implication is that if the Lord of the heavens and the earth forgoes the arrogance of his creatures and forgives them if they repent, his creatures should also not misuse their authority over others. Believers, you are forbidden to forcibly inherit women, nor by treating them with harshness may you take away part of what you have given them, except where they have been guilty of open lewdness, and live with them befittingly. Because if you dislike them, It may that you dislike a thing, and Allah brings about through it a great deal of good. Surah 4 verse 19. These verses mention the rights of women and instruct the society regarding the correct behavior to be adopted with them. The first thing pointed out is that women are not assets or animals which a person may inherit and then use them the way he likes. They too are human beings who have an independent personality. They are given free will which they can fully exercise in the limits set forth by the Almighty. The background of giving this directive is that in certain sections of pre-Islamic Arabia, the wives of a person were also transferred to his heirs like his wealth and the animals would be. And if he had sons, they would even establish sexual relations with these stepmothers without any hesitation. The Quran sought to put an end to this ignominious custom and stressed that women are fully free to make their decisions. Nothing can be imposed upon them without their consent. The second thing stressed here is that even if a believer dislikes his wife, he should not subject her to harsh treatment in order to recover any wealth or property that he has gifted her. Such an attitude can only be accepted if the wife is guilty of open sexual transgression. If the wife is not guilty of such behavior and is living as a faithful and obedient lady leading a virtuous life, it is totally against justice and decency for the husband to harass her merely because he dislikes her. No doubt if a wife shows moral misconduct, then this is a detestable thing. But no husband is allowed to deprive her of a decent living because he does not like her looks or because her temperament is different from his. The third thing emphasized here is that a husband who does not like his wife should not deal with her in accordance with the norms of justice and equity, graciousness and decency, to which his own nature testifies. The words used in the verse to convey this meaning imply good intentions and traditions of a society. In other words, the Quran instructs a husband to adopt a befitting attitude with his wife in accordance with the good traditions of the society whether he likes her or not. He is told that if he treats her nicely in spite of his aversion to her, he might win the blessings of the Almighty both in this world and in the hereafter. While explaining the words used to convey the above-mentioned meaning, Imam Amin Hassan Islahi writes, "Although the word used here in Arabic implies hope and expectation, those who are aware of the delicacies of the language know that when used on occasions such as this, it implies a promise from the Almighty. This reference points to the fact that those who give priority to higher human traits and values instead of appearance are promised great rewards from the Almighty for this sacrifice. Those who have actually embarked upon this track have borne witness to the veracity of this fact. And none other than God is the most truthful." Amin Hassan Islahi, Tadabburi Quran, Volume 2, page 270. It is obvious from the above discussion that if a husband is required to behave decently, even if he dislikes the wife, he is all the more required to be decent when there is no cause for this dislike. A wrong attitude in this regard would earn great displeasure of the Almighty. In the sermon of the last Hajj, the Prophet ﷺ is reported to have said, "Indeed, you have rights over women, and they also have rights over you. You have the right that they neither permit into your homes nor sleep with anyone you dislike. Listen, their right upon you is that you feed and clothe them in the best way you are able to." Reference Ibn Majah, Sunan, Volume 2, page 417, number 1851. Polygamy. "And if you fear that you shall not be able to deal justly with the orphans, marry their mothers who are lawful to you. 223344. But if you fear that you shall not be able to deal justly with them, then only one, or those which your right hands possess. That will be more suitable to prevent you from doing injustice. And give these women their dowers also the way dowers are given. But if they, of their own good pleasure, remit any part of it to you, take it and consume it gladly." Surah 4 verses 3-4. The addressees of the above quoted verses are the guardians of the orphans. They are directed to marry the mothers of the orphans who are lawful to them, if they feared that they would not be able to do justice to the onerous responsibility of protecting the rights of the orphans and taking care of their wealth and property. In other words, if they decide that if the mothers of the orphans share with them this responsibility, they would be able to discharge it in a better way, they should go ahead and marry them. The reason is that the extent to which mothers are attached to their orphan children, no other person can ever be. It is evident from this explanation that the above-quoted verses were not primarily revealed to state any directive regarding polygamy. They were actually revealed to make use of the pre-existing practice of polygamy in Arabia, for the welfare of the orphans. At other places, the Quran has clearly alluded to the fact that as per the norms of human nature, the real benefits and advantages of the institution of family manifest themselves in a monogamous family. Consequently, it is stated in various verses that the father of mankind, Adam, radiallahu ta'ala anhu, was blessed with one wife. It is basically social, psychological, political, and cultural needs from which arose the need for polygamy. Such needs existed in various societies to different extents. To cater for these very needs, the Almighty never forbade this practice in the Sharia He gave in various periods of time. Here, in these verses, Muslims are directed to make use of this practice to solve a social problem that had arisen in the time of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. However, it has been made conditional upon two things. First, even for as noble and objective as the welfare of orphans, a person cannot marry more than four wives. Second, if a person is not able to deal justly with all four wives, he should not marry more than one. Justice is a value that has to be maintained at all costs and cannot be sacrificed even for such a noble cause. What are the limits of this justice? If this means equality in a person's inner inclination and his outer behavior, then this is not possible for any person. If a person, while being married to a wife he greatly loves, marries a widow for the welfare of the orphans, it is impossible for him to show equal love and behavior for both these wives. Consequently, this very question had arisen in the period of the revelation of the Quran. So in Surah 4 verses 127 to 130, an answer was given to this question. In these verses, it is first explained that whether marriage has taken place to protect the rights of the orphans, or for some other purpose, payment of dower and discharging of justice are the rights of a woman, and the former must be given with the willingness of the heart, as is also pointed out in Surah 4 verse 3. Women are then counseled that if they fear that husbands may show indifference to them, or even think of parting ways with them because of their insistence to be treated equally, it is all right if husband and wife settle for a compromise. The Quran says, "And if any of these women fears cruelty or neglect on her husband's part, there is no blame on the two of them if they arrange an amicable settlement between themselves, and they should consider that such a settlement is best. And, in reality, man is greedy by nature. But if you do good and practice self-restraint, you should rest assured that Allah is well acquainted with all that you do." Surah 4 verse 128. While explaining the above-quoted verse, Imam Amin Hassan Islahi writes, "This means that a wife may show lenience to her husband in her demand for justice, as well as payment of dower and maintenance to her in order to dispense with the imminent fear of separation." The verse goes on to say that in settlements rest the welfare of all, because it is in the interest of both husband and wife that this relationship once established should continue forever, even if a lot of sacrifice has to be made to keep it intact. Continuing with words of counsel, the verse says that greed is an evil found in human beings that affects mutual relationships. The remedy for this malady is that either both should get ready to make some sacrifice, or if one of them is ill enough by not being willing to do so, the other should take the initiative. So if the wife has to make some sacrifice to keep the family unit intact, it is better that she do so. In the end, the words, "But if you do good and practice self-restraint," of the verse urge the husband to adopt the way of sacrifice and selflessness, and it is only befitting that he show magnanimity and piety in this regard. He should live up to his traditions of grit and character, and instead of being a receiver from the woman, he should let her be the receiver. The Almighty has knowledge of every deed a person does, and He will greatly reward pious deeds. Reference Amin Hassan Islahi Tadabburi Quran, Volume 2, page 399. The subsequent verses delineate the bounds of justice in the following words: "And even if it is your ardent desire, you will never be able to be totally just between women. So it is enough if you do not completely incline yourself to a woman altogether, so as to leave the other side. And if you come to a friendly understanding and fear Allah, Allah is oft forgiving, most merciful. But if they disagree and eventually must part, Allah will provide abundance for each from His bounty, and He is bountiful and wise. Surah 4 verses 129-130. It is evident from the above quoted verses that the requirement of justice between wives does not mean justice between them regarding the husband's inner inclination or external behavior. It is humanly impossible to be just in this matter because one has no power over one's heart in such affairs. Therefore, in this regard, the Quran requires of a husband to not completely lean towards one of the wives and show indifference to the other, as if she had no husband. Consequently, he is asked to show balance in his behavior towards them and in discharging their rights. In case of any fault or blemish in this matter, he should at once try to reform the state of affairs by making amends and should keep fearing the Almighty. If, in spite of the effort, something remains amiss, hopefully the Almighty will have mercy on him. Allah's mercy is all-embracing. The last part of the verse stresses that one should try everything to save the family from dismemberment. This is what Allah wants. However, if owing to compelling circumstances, separation does take place, one should hope for the best from the Almighty. It is He who provides sustenance to His creatures and assists them in hardships. He would fully help both the husband and the wife and fulfill their needs through His grace. Imam Amin Asan Islahi writes, "The implication being that efforts that reflect selflessness and sacrifice are required from both the husband and wife in order to keep this relationship intact. However, this restoration must be done with honor and integrity, just as it is not permissible for either the husband or wife to show vanity in this regard. It is also not permissible to show accommodation beyond a certain point. Although the words used are general, it is evident from the context that the wife is encouraged to adjust and adapt to the situation as much as is possible and also show selflessness to achieve this end. However, she should rest assured that if, in spite of her efforts, the family does not remain intact, the Almighty is the one who provides and sustains all. He will completely fulfill her needs from His treasures." Reference Ibid, Volume 2, page 400. Here, it should be kept in mind that the Prophet was exempted from both the above-mentioned restrictions so that he could discharge certain responsibilities that were entrusted to him in his capacity as the final messenger of God. Consequently, in order to raise the status of slaves in the society, the Prophet ﷺ had wedded together his paternal cousin Zainab radiallahu ta'ala anhu and his liberated slave and adopted son Zayd radiallahu ta'ala anhu. However, when this marriage could no longer be pulled along, the Almighty bade the Prophet ﷺ to marry her to comfort and solace her and put an end to the evil social custom according to which a person could not marry the wife of his adopted son. At that time, the Prophet ﷺ already had four wives. The Prophet ﷺ himself thought that perhaps marrying Zainab radiallahu ta'ala anhu was the only way out because of what ensued between her and Zayd radiallahu ta'ala anhu, but he never expressed these thoughts. The Almighty revealed these inner thoughts and told him that the messengers of Allah do not care about the reaction of people while discharging their responsibilities. Consequently, the Prophet's marriage with Zainab radiallahu ta'ala anhu was proclaimed by the Almighty Himself in the Quran. "And remember, O Prophet, when you were repeatedly saying to one who had received the favor of Allah and your favor, 'Retain your wife in wedlock and fear Allah,' and you were hiding in your heart that which Allah was about to make manifest, you were fearing the people, but it is more fitting that you should fear Allah. Then when Zayd broke his relationship with her, we joined her in marriage to you, so that in future there may be no difficulty on the believers in the matter of marriage with the wives of their adopted sons, when the latter have dissolved their relationships of marriage with them." And this command of Allah had to be fulfilled. Surah 33 verse 37. Right after this proclamation, the Almighty revealed detailed directives specifically for the Prophet ﷺ regarding marriage and divorce. In these directives, the above quoted conditions for polygamy were repealed, but certain other restrictions were imposed on him that were not imposed on other Muslims. "O Prophet, we have made lawful to you the wives whom you have paid their dowers and free women whom God gives in your possession because of a military campaign, and the daughters of your paternal uncles and aunts, and the daughters of your maternal uncles and aunts who migrated from Mecca with you, and any believing woman who gifts her soul to the Prophet on the condition that the Prophet wishes to marry her. This directive is specifically for you alone and not for the believers. We very well know what we have imposed on them as obligations regarding their wives and slave girls. A special directive for you so that there be no difficulty for you in discharging your duties, and in case of any blemish, Allah is forgiving and merciful. You have the authority to keep any of them away from you, and keep any of them near you, and it is lawful for you to bring any of them near you whom you have kept away. There is no blame on you in this regard. This explanation is more proper so that they be contented and not be sorrowful, and feel satisfied with whatever you give all of them. And Allah knows what is in your hearts, and Allah is all-knowing and most forbearing. All other women besides these are not lawful for you, nor can you change them for other wives, even though their beauty attracts you. Slave girls, however, are still allowed to you. And in reality, Allah does watch over all things. Surah 33, verses 50-52. The statutes on which this group of directives is based are, firstly, after contracting marriage with Zainab radiallahu ta'ala anhu, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam could marry further for the following objectives: to honor free women who were caught as captives in some military campaign, to show kind-heartedness to women who wanted to marry him just for the sake of associating themselves to him, and for this they were ready to gift themselves to him, to console and sympathize with his maternal or paternal cousin sisters who had migrated with him from Mecca and left their houses and relatives merely to support and back him. Secondly, since these marriages of the Prophet ﷺ were to be contracted only to fulfill certain religious obligations, he was not required to deal equally between the wives. Thirdly, except for the women specified, he was prohibited to marry any other lady. He could also not divorce any of his wives, nor bring a new one in her place however much he liked her. Consequently, because of these restrictions, the Prophet ﷺ could not marry Maria, radiallahu ta'ala anhu, and she remained in his house as a slave lady. Consequently, the Prophet ﷺ married Juwayriya, radiallahu ta'ala anhu, and Safiya for the first objective outlined above, Maymuna radiallahu ta'ala anhu for the second, and Habiba radiallahu ta'ala anhu for the third. It also pointed out in these verses that the wives of the Prophet ﷺ are the mothers of the believers. Consequently, marriage is eternally prohibited with them. No Muslim should even think of marrying them after the Prophet's death. The Prophet holds priority for the believers over their own selves, and his wives are their mothers. Surah 33, verse 6. Nor is it right for you that you should marry his widows after him at any time. Truly such a thing is abominable in Allah's sight. Surah 33, verse 53. It is evident from this discussion that these marriage directives were given to Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam as a religious obligation in his capacity as a prophet and a messenger of God. He followed these directives, and there was no element of personal desire in these marriages. Consequently, the need arose to make these directives an exception to the general ones given to the Muslims in this regard.